Hello, and welcome to Talking in Stations, an EVE Online podcast recorded live on Twitch. Filling in for Matterall today, I am your host, Artemis Albosa, joined by my co-host, Noisy Gamer.
Hello, everybody.
On the panel today, we will be going through basically a capstone of what has happened in Providence. To help us out with that, we have ProGod Legend from Test Alliance Please Ignore.
How you doing?
Doing well. We also have from Test Alliance Please Ignore, FC Farmstink.
Hey, what's up?
And rounding out the trio, we have former CSM candidate Creature.
Hello.
Also on the show today, we're going to have from Pandemic Legion, Harvey Skywalker.
Comrades, hello.
And last but certainly not least, we have Lumio, the hero of Providence.
Hey guys.
So let's jump right into it. We're basically going to want to go through and give a quick hindsight view of the recent conflicts which has happened in Providence. So to give a top-down view of what the discussion is going to go through, we're going to start with PL initiating the invasion of Providence. We're going to go through, we're going to talk with Lumio about what he made the decision to do in response to this. Then we're going to talk about Legacy's moves, and then I cannot believe we have a very special guest on the show today. We have Czar from Ushrakan.
Well, I was wondering if you were going to forget me the whole 60 minutes of the show, but thanks anyway for the invite, and I'm very happy to be here.
And we'll be getting to Czar once we get through the section on Legacy invading Providence again. So let's start out with you, Harvey. You wrote a very good article on Talking in Stations that sort of gives a very detailed look at PL's invasion of Providence. Could you give us a bit of an overview of that article?
Yeah, I mean, do you want me to go through the whole thing? We could link it and people can read. But basically, that article was, you know, my own perspective of the conflict. I was very much doing the small scale day to day in Tostes warfare in that conflict, rather than calling full Pandemic Legion fleets whenever they were required. I looked upwards through my to my superiors and called for backup if I needed it. But just the small gang day to day in Tostes was kind of my perspective, and yeah, it was interesting.
Could you tell us a bit about what that small gang day to day experience looked like for you?
Well, there was obviously it changed the situation in Provi evolved over the time we were there. Obviously, we Pandemic Legion, you know, we took our sweet time over evicting CVA and taking all the sob. Initially, when we went in, you know, there wasn't actually any fixed dates or anything for the changeover. So, you know, it was sold to me by the leadership PR that we were going to go in and previously there had been conflicts with or there had been various fights with Provi Block using capitals, Legacy and Test helping them out a bit. And it was basically the aim of it was to go into Provi from the domain side from Asar and instigate another conflict, hopefully to get some really good fights with Provi now, because at that time, you know, they were forming big fleets, they were using capitals. Jintan was being very effective with his long-range dreads on citadels and things like that. You know, it looked like it was going to provide some really good content, and it did, to be honest. For the first sort of month and a half of PL and NC Dot versus Provi Block with a bit of help from Test, you know, there were some good fights, and you know, it was quite entertaining for everybody. And then as CVA, you know, like I said in my article, we had planned to basically lop off the smaller alliances out of the coalition, the Provi Block coalition, to bring their numbers down a little bit and make our life, you know, make their fleet slightly more manageable, basically, because at the time, you know, they were forming bigger than PL was on its own, at least. Maybe with NC Dot, I think we were probably equal. So that was the strategy, was to pick them apart. And it worked for the most part. You know, there was a good example was ULI Federation, who sold a lot of their structures after we'd killed all their iHubs and the writing was on the wall for their constellation. Basically, they packed their bags and left and joined Legacy proper. And I think they've got a nice little bit of space in Imensee now. But that was a classic example. You know, we picked on them, you know, one group in the coalition, pick on one alliance, and eventually they break. And then that's just another, you know, that's minus 20 people out of the Provi block CTA fleet. You know, and we just did that with each alliance we could until eventually, you know, CVA couldn't form big enough to take on just PL, let alone when NCDOT were there to help us as well.
So this strategy that you have of identifying a particular alliance within the coalition and focusing on them, is that influenced at all with the way PhosiSolve works?
I think it is, but it's not something new. You know, that's been a way of...
Standard procedure.
Yeah, exactly. Eating some hot wings there, ProGod.
No, I got a burrito.
Okay. Yeah, but like you say, it's an old strategy. It just, I think maybe it's become more relevant with the fact that the SOV mechanics, you know, you can't actually aid in the defense physically. You can't intosis defensively for an allied alliance. They have to do the actual intosis work themselves. You can go there and help in a fleet and everything and fight off the baddies, but you can't physically intosis. So yeah, that I would say the SOV mechanics help with it, but it's an age-old tactic.
Interesting. Now, Lumio, you came in on the defensive side of Providence. Could you tell me a bit about when you decided to make that decision? When did you decide that you needed to come and help defend Providence?
Well, the decision came from them, like killing the structure that allowed me to make money. I was making money with a Vexor Navy. So I've been already noticed like a few weeks before they came that I need to bank, like I need to make a lot of money so I can stay in the region and be able to fight. So I pretty much managed to get maybe 4 or 5 billion. And then I didn't have anything to do except tracking PL and try to take a fight with them. So I think it's just because they didn't allow me to make money that made me like looking for other things to do. And well, fighting them was one great thing I could do.
Interesting. So you have a corp. It's only 5 people in the corp. Are those other individuals or are those some alts?
There is 3 people in the corp. Obviously, I hold 3 alt in the corp. But they are casual, like one of them never play. They are people that I know outside of the game, of course. So we were trying to come back to the game. One is very busy, the other doesn't seem to like the game, so.
Gotcha. Now, you made quite the ruckus on Reddit. Did you ever receive any aid in-game from other people sort of showing up and joining your fleets, sending you ISK, sending you ships, or just generally egging you on in your fight to save Providence?
Yeah, I had a lot of help from other players. At the beginning, I was fighting HTP before PL, and I was fighting them like every day, and I was just coming back for more fights. Like I was respawning in Amor, just grab another Tristan, going back to their system. So after a few times, like after a few days, they started to say like, okay, dude, you're doing it wrong. Try this fit. Like at the beginning, they were just giving me fits and ISK, like short amount of money just to buy another Tristan and, you know, come back, try something else. And eventually I ended up bumping into PL. And I remember one PL guy basically took a full hour of his time just chatting with me and explaining what I was doing wrong. And like, don't go in a straight line into your enemy if he has bigger ship, like it won't work. And it gave me fit, so now I'm kind of skilling to take Balgorn eventually, but that takes me a lot of days, so with time I will have better ship. of course, like the legacy guys and brave guys, like when later I ended up bumping into them because PL were less active because they kind of took everything they could and did destroy everything they could. And they pretty much did this very same thing that HTP and PL did, like sending me ships or ISK and helping me getting better at the game.
Gotcha. So even when Legacy came back in, reportedly to liberate Providence, if you will, though they didn't exactly liberate the stations back to Providence, you fought with them as well?
No, I was pretty much fighting on my own from the beginning. Like, I don't have, like, any contact with the locals, I would say, like, Providence guys. I knew the Legacy was coming from outside, same for PL and HTP.
There's plenty of Lumio killmails on Legacy killboards, too.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have a good relation with Test because I think every good relation starts with a killmail, and That might be why I got a good relation with Brave and Test. Like, we're not blue, we're not friends, but I like them, they like me. Some of them like me, I suppose.
I can remember sitting there on a gate with like a 50-man Jackdaw fleet or whatever, and you're out there in your Tristan 200 kilometers away, and we're like, nobody kill Lumio, don't do it. And then Southside's Titan shows up and one-shots you from like 100 kilometers, and we're like...
Yeah, but
luckily Southside got his comeuppance later, so you know.
But at that time, I found myself in a strange position because I was telling everyone, like, please keep shooting me because it's way more simple to me, like, to play, because you go through a gate, there's plenty of people, and you don't know if they are going to shoot you or not. So I just wanted to make things clear, but yeah. Many of them didn't want to shoot me, but...
So, they may not have wanted to shoot you, but they definitely wanted to shoot PL. ProGod, can you walk us through the thought process? Why did you make the decision to go into and invade Providence?
Well, there was 82 faction citadels at stake.
Was that basically it? You're just in it for a cash grab?
Yeah, I mean, It's, you know, we wanted the faction citadels. We wanted to deny PL their objective for however, I mean, no one can truly say, I guess, other than PL leadership, whether that was the plan all along. But it was definitely in their mind all along that they could get the Providence stations. I remember 2 years ago, ever since they announced that stations would eventually be removed and destructible, PL's been talking about coming after Providence, so... It was, you know, a nice moral victory as well, I guess, or just denying them something they've been looking forward to for a while. There's a lot of good little things that come out of it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a no-brainer as well, what with almost every single system the stations were under being 1 ADM, you know, it was kind of a...
Most of them didn't even have iHubs, so...
Yeah.
So, Farmstink, can you walk us through what was your role in this conflict?
My role was, you know, I'm sitting there, we're like based out of U-Q, right in the middle of Catch, and I'm like, oh man, what if I go after this citadel or that citadel, because I'm bored and I want to do this. And then 2 days after, I think I mentioned that I wanted to go after one of those Immensi citadels, ProGod really were like, all right, we're moving to Providence. And I'm like, oh, that's a lot more citadels, so I guess I got a lot more work to do. But my whole role was just after these guys, you know, sent out orders and I received them, it was like, okay, I'm going to go lead a bunch of fleets and take a bunch of stations.
Gotcha. So we've got a fantastic article from Harvey on the PL perspective, sort of from the line member view. He was doing a small gang thing. Could you give us a similar overview, just briefly, from the Test side of things, from your perspective, of just start to finish, what did the conflict look like?
Yeah, so at the outset, you know, we're all moving our supers down, and I was thinking I would have to do a whole bunch of coordination of like pushing people to go reinforce things and pushing people to go gate camp and do all kinds of other stuff. And that turned out not to be the case. Even as we were doing our move op, so like we were not doing any official ops, half of Providence got reinforced regardless. So we had a bunch of station timers coming out way earlier than I expected. So my whole battle plan was like, okay, I'm just gonna, I know that Test is the only entity that's capable of flash forming to counter whatever PL does. We've got all the supers. We can always form 100 plus people. So whenever PL forms, I'm going to be the one to just go block them and play against PL. And then everybody else in Legacy, so you see that almost all the stations got captured by, you know, Boogeyman, Brave, Requiem got like 15 or 16 alone, maybe even 20. They were the ones who were doing all the Entosis work because I didn't want to focus on it. I just wanted to focus on fighting PL. So every time PL formed up, whether it was going to be Claws or Jackdaws or Feroxes or anything else they tried to do, I was like, okay, whatever their objective is, I'm making sure that I focus that objective, and then all the other stuff can just happen in the background, right? So it was a lot of getting on Discord daily, talking to Brave, Requiem, Boogeyman, whoever in Legacy, and saying, you guys need to go do this station, that station. Do you have an FC for this? Do you have an FC for that? And then, oh, look, PL's forming 1,800 Claws. Okay, well, I'm going to form Claws in defense, and we're going to go chase them around. That's basically it.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned Claws there, and it's been a criticism of FozzySolve in the past that sort of the ultimate doctrine to go to is just a mass of interceptors. And I found it interesting, Harvey, that you mentioned you mostly did small gang work. Could you describe for us how the small gang work happened in FozzySolve and who you used it against? Did that change once Pravi went away and Legacy came into the picture?
Yeah, it did. I mean, initially against Pravi, I was able to, because we had, you know, we had the upper hand in capitals against Pravi, you know, there was no doubt about that. And so, you know, I was in a similar position that Farmstink was in, where I could go out, you know, with a few guys and some Entosis ults, and we would start doing things. And if Pravi formed, then, you know, I would poke somebody and say, you need to come and counter, you know, counter Provi's Ferox fleet or whatever it is they're going to form. And obviously, you know, eventually when you're constantly getting blocked, you stop doing it. And that's, you know, happened to Pravi, you know, from PL versus Pravi, and then it happened back to PL from Farmstink forming whenever anything, you know, properly organized. But then when I came to do it once Legacy were on the scene, you know, just like Farmstink said, there was various groups, Requiem, Brave, and they'd send out their little gangs, Jack Doors, some Requiem sometimes did just sort of T1 cruisers and things like that. And it was all, that was all like perfect stuff for me and my boys, the small gang against, you know, we loved that. But obviously, you know, Farmstink was doing his job superbly. And whenever I would go after one of those groups, you know, we would quickly ship up into our favorite, which is the Bruix Navy issue gang that we make. And we had formed that up to fight, you know, some Brave Feroxes or Requiem Ferox's Boogeyman, you know, all of those guys. And they would, you know, quite rightly pull back, you know, retreat to safety, wait 10, 20 minutes. And after that 20 minute period, Farmstink would be there with whatever appropriate counter he needed, be it a load of scepters, you know, to hold
us down. It was pretty much always a load of scepters.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you could just hold us down with the scepters, like you did do, hold us down and then drop some carriers on us if we've got Logi and things, you know, which you did to me once and killed my entire Bruix Navy gang, which is only a sort of 10, 12 guys, but it's still, you know.
Harvey, I got a question. But like the one thing that surprised me the entire time is how little other PL people outside of your main corp participated in you and Rackner's operations. Like I know Rackner and I have had this conversation a lot, how Entosis Warfare is more fun than people give it credit for. Like, is it just like such a deep-seated cultural hate against Entosis that y'all couldn't get more people involved, or what was it there?
I wouldn't say it was a cultural hate. There's a cultural hate against Entosis Warfare. There's a, you know, there were people that joined in from other corps, 100%. You know, had a little group, but you're right. You know, there was a limited group, and not through any, you know, sort of purposeful thing from people. I think that a lot of people are just used to the old way of playing Eve in a, you know, a PvP alliance, which was 100% the best way to do things, which was, you know, what we all call now ping warrioring, you know, where you wait around, you get a ping, you get in a fleet, you bridge somewhere, you jump in somewhere, you get some kills and you go home again. But that isn't necessarily the best way of doing FozzySolve, because it's sort of like, it's an, especially in the invasions and things like what happened in Provi. It's like an ongoing thing. You know, there's timers all day, every day. There's something to do out there the whole time, you know. And actually, if you ping the whole alliance every time you've got to do that, you actually, you know, my fear always is that you're turning people off the Fozzy Sov, because every time you ping them, if you ping them 10 times in a day or evening, and each time you form a big old gang, but that makes the enemy disappear into the woodwork, and they've just been shown that, you know, Fozzy Sov's dull because there's no enemy out there. You know, I'd love to hear from Farmstink whether there was a bit of that factor, you know, because it's, you know, it seemed to me, although it was effective, you know, Farmstink would form and ping for everybody every single time, every over and over again. And I initially felt that, you know, might wear them down a bit. But then I thought about it, and, you know, I said in my article how the end date, that date of June 5th, would have been a big factor in keeping everybody plugging away at it. You know, it's like the light at the end of the tunnel almost, that date shut off. So,
yeah, that's exactly it. And we did suffer our numbers. I'm sure if you paid attention to, like, okay, test has like 120 claws. Okay, well, 2 weeks in, test has 50 claws. Numbers suffered from our side too, because that's exactly it. People weren't getting the content they wanted, except from Ushur Khan, by the way, who, once they deployed the 9 UI, we actually got some good, like, Goku fleet fights, and we appreciated the content y'all brought. But yeah, people got bored, obviously, especially with the Ping Warrior aspect. The people who didn't get bored were the ones who weren't Ping Warriors. So, like, I could shout out to Derpman Derps, for example, who was happily chasing down Bifrost with his Interceptor, like his Tyrannus, all day. That kind of content is what Fozzy Sov's really all about, is just logging in. And even when it doesn't seem like anything's going on, there's probably a gate camp, there's probably some solo dudes out there, there's probably some harassment to be done. So I had to focus on that too. And of course, I made a big morale post, like, with a couple days left to go until all the stations were secure. I was like, okay, everybody, you got to keep logging in. Like, this is really important. They could make a big push in the last couple days, which of course you didn't, but you could have, right? So it was important enough to me and to everybody else that we just keep trucking and get as many numbers as possible. Like, 2 days, all you have to do is be bored for 2 days, and then we're done with this.
Yeah, and I initially had thought, oh, maybe they've come in a bit early. This sort of, when you initially deployed and it was announced, I think there was maybe 3 to 4 weeks. And I thought, oh, maybe they've come in early. I'm going to be able to, you know, weather the initial, you know, flurry of activity. And as you, yeah, your numbers sort of dwindle from not getting full fights, I might be able to get pushback. But then we, you know, watching what was happening, we realized, you know, you had it in you to keep forming every day over and over again, you know, which I commend you for. I
meant being unemployed. I mean,
the original plan was to only do it with 2 weeks to go to June 5th. But I was worried that, you know, we didn't know exactly how it'd play out. There's always a chance of complications, things you didn't expect. You know, the plan probably wouldn't go as planned, you know, that kind of stuff. So we bumped it up to 3 weeks. But yeah, I mean, we had a large number of people. It'd be tough for you guys to deal with that. It was pretty strict.
Yeah. I think you made the right choice. You know, initially I was just sort of clinging onto a thread thinking, perhaps they've come early and I can get a bit of, you know, I can push back a bit nearer the end. But, you know, it wasn't the way. You're right. You know, it was a good timing, I'd say.
Well, one group who did push back near the end was Ushur Khan. And we have Zar here from Ushur Khan. Zar, before we get into the details of what you guys were doing near the end of this Providence conflict, could you give us a bit of history between Ushur Khan, Pravi Block, even General?
Well, first of all, Ushur Khan has been in 00 quite some time, but that's already a long time ago. And our oldest members, they still remember putting up the station in 9UI. It was not the first station that has been put up in Providence, but one of the first. And lots of effort went into that at that time because it was not so custom. And so we still have people who were there initially when the initial egg was planted in our alliance. And so for us, 9UY has a special meaning. And so we have been fighting CVA over that station and also over the surrounding systems. But that dates back to, let's say, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And actually, it was a very heroic fight, both on our side and on the CVA side, and we still have very good memories on that. Unfortunately, and eventually after after lots of fighting, Ushra Khan did leave the area. We were basically outfought by CVA, and so we went back, and the alliance suffered quite a lot from that. People went to other alliances, and we went actually, we were not so strong at a certain point in time, so we had to rebuild, and that took a lot of time. And so actually we are for the moment based in Losec in the Minmatar faction warfare space, where we are fighting Amar over the plexus, the smalls, the medium, the largest, the whole faction warfare thing. And our pilots, they also like that a lot. They are quite specialized in that. And so we are at the moment not really a 0-0 alliance. So when this whole faction 40-Tsar conversion was announced at FanFest, and when on one of the slides it was featured that 9UY would get a permanent monument, our membership went crazy because of all those fights and all that legacy that we had. We wanted really to have that monument. But the problem was we needed to have unity in order to secure the monument. And so because we are not a NullSec alliance and we are not so big in numbers, we don't have the resources at the moment that the major alliances have. Lots of discussions went on, and because we had to see how to do it, and actually we decided to give it a go and to go to Providence and to deploy there, maybe against all odds, because we knew that we were going to face overwhelming odds. And so it happened. I can really tell that even when we deployed and when we went with our fleet there the first time, we didn't even get to 9UI because there was so much opposition that we were basically fighting a lot. But that's also typical Ushra Khan, and already somebody said it here during the show. We do not stay docked in station, even with the overwhelming odds against us. So we went in and we had a lot of fun, and eventually we were able to reach 9UI. We deployed there and we had a lot of fun. We had lots of fleets. For us, it was a great time. But the issue was that we didn't have any friends there, so we didn't have any blues. Everybody was either neutral or red, so everybody was shooting at us. And that's actually a situation that we did not want in the first place, because we came to fight CVA and to try to conquer the station, but there was much more to that. And so, it has been written also all over the forums, I think. Many things happened. Eventually, we were able to secure the station. We gave it back to Brave. That was part of a deal. And we have, hopefully, the permanent monument now, one of these days. So that's in short what we did there.
Well, y'all's biggest success was the PR campaign you waged, right? You went on Reddit and you made a big post. You declared that you were coming. And there's a couple of propaganda items to the effect of, like, you know, where is CVA? We came expecting... What's that image? It was like we came expecting to find CVA, and instead all we find was, you know, and it's a picture of like Jurassic Park. I thought that was beautiful.
Well, that's typically us. We are quite small in numbers, so the only viable tactic we can rely on is guerrilla warfare, and propaganda is part of guerrilla warfare. So we try to do that as best as we can, and we have pilots who really love that, as you've seen. So we made many posters that we posted in local and so on. We didn't get banned for that, luckily. It was a lot of fun, and propaganda is part of it. And there are some very good Reddit posts on this whole campaign, and they are, I think, very interesting to read. And that's what we are.
So what's next for Ushra Khan? You've got the monument secured. You gave the station back to Brave as part of your deal. What's next?
Well, the thing is that although our pilots are actually low-sec pilots, I think many of them got the taste now. So we are going to remain in low-sec, that's clear. We are going to continue doing faction warfare, but we are also going to keep a presence in Pravi, not to fight the alliances who are there, only to fight CVA. That's basically what we are going to do. And of course, if others shoot us, then we will shoot back, that's for sure. But our goal is to have this holy war, in the words of the Amar, with them, because we think it's amazing content. We also believe that the cluster likes that engagement, and everybody who wants to join that is free to join with us, of course, against CVA. So that's what we are going to do.
Interesting. Now, I'll shift some focus over here towards Harvey and Pandemic Legion. You guys came in, you conquered all of Providence, and then Test came in, conquered all of Providence again. What's next for PL?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Personally, I've given my guys a little bit of time to do some sort of house cleaning type logistics and things. Obviously, as Alliance, we've got our own stations that are now Fortisar, you know, our own faction Fortisars that we need to deal with how we see fit. So we've gone back up to the north and, just doing some sort of cleaning of house and general logistics, getting ourselves ready for whatever it is that does come next.
So your group in particular, the Peaky Blinders, you mentioned you had your corporation, then a few other people who sort of jumped on the bandwagon, if you will, joined in on the fun. Are you guys just going to, whatever the next deployment is, go on that? Or are you going to strike out on your own, do your own thing? What are your plans? What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, no, we'll be doing whatever the Alliance decides is the next thing to do. I will, as I always do, look at it and decide where can me and my guys be most effective? How can we help the Alliance the most? So, you know, what can we do? And yeah, whatever it is, whoever the target is, I'll look at it and go, where can I cause the most chaos? Where can I make the
Come
most
on
impact?
That trident, bud.
Yeah, where can I shove my trident?
Oh, yeah.
Lumio, what's next for your group?
For now, I'm actually deploying nearby Tinol. I'm trying to attack the region. I'm doing my best. Doesn't always work, but I managed to snatch a sovereignty there. And
really?
I keep attacking them the best way I can. But my goal was to simply harass them at the forest place from Providence. It kind of worked. Now I seem to have caught their attention, so they take me more seriously, which means like they actually bring people to contest me, which is a cool improvement, I would say. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty much only Tino. Like, I'm just attacking Tino for now, and I'll keep attacking until I'm pretty much bored, or I don't know. I will eventually move to something else, but it's only about damage. I don't have like a tactical objective, or I don't have a pretty much set goal. I just want to make damage, have fight. Then I guess I'll
like
go back and probably.
Campaign.
I'm sorry.
A harassment campaign, basically.
Yeah.
Internal in our weak underbelly.
Well.
So Lumio, do you have anything else you'd like to say to the Talking in Stations listeners?
Yes, there is something I would like to say. Well, actually, it's not to the listeners. It's pretty much to the PL big boss.
Little boss.
Before I go, thanks for having me. Thanks for the time. This message is for the PL big boss. Big boss, we're coming for Tino. You know, they say all men are created equal, but when you look at me and you look at PL, you see that statement ain't true. See, normally, when you go one-on-one with another team, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm ballsy and I'm not normal. So PL, you got a 25% at best at defending Dino. Then we can add NC Dot in the mix, but you still got a 33% chance of beating me. But I got a 66% chance of winning because NC Dot knows they can beat me and they're not even going to try. So I take my 75% chance of winning and I have my 66% chance. I got 141% chance of winning the entire region. Pandemic Legion, the numbers don't lie and they spell disaster for you and Dino.
Well, speaking of disasters for PL, ProGod, talk about tests, talk about legacy. What's next for you guys now that you've conquered Providence, you've got these stations? What's on the docket?
Well, I think 2018 is going to be a finish out to be a pretty good year. I think we're finally going to get Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord. I've been really looking forward to that. I think we're going to have a good group for that. Paradox announced a new game based in Roman history, which is, I mean, I've been waiting for that for a long time. A Crusader Kings 2 based in Roman history would be amazing. And I think between that, we'll have a pretty good setup for the rest of 2018. We'll see how it goes. We've got a lot of things going on, but for the most part, it's been a pretty good year so far.
Interesting. I've been playing a bit of the latest Stellaris DLC myself, and I'd highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah. That's another one.
Farmstink, how about yourself? What are your plans?
My plans are to keep looking for a job. If you guys know of anybody who needs a finance analyst around the Chicago area, just hit me up, because I would love to not be playing.
Stay unemployed. 7, dude. Stay unemployed.
ProGod's like, no, I don't want to have to run fleets. No, I plan to keep running Goku fleets until they finally become irrelevant, because right now I'm having a lot of fun with those.
Now, on the topic of the next target for those Goku fleets, there's been a lot of speculation, particularly from the gentleman who runs the New Eden Report, that Legacy is getting ready to invade down in the southeast. You guys willing to make any comment about that?
I believe that's fake news.
Fake news.
I mean, I think we're going to be too busy playing Solaris and Paradox's ROM game.
All right.
Yeah. So, is that the report where it said that Legacy was going to attack MNC? But I thought Legacy already had MNC. I thought they pretty much
had the parts of MNC that we weren't.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. So moving on to plans, we got to touch on the topic creature. You were on the test ballot, and recently some things came to light. Some stuff has happened. You're no longer on the test ballot. Could you talk to us about the situation?
So that was an interesting thing. I mean, I guess there's pretty much can start from anywhere. It ended up being posted on my campaign form thread the day before. I got an email from CCP Guard saying, by the way, you're either going to need to resign or you're going to have to step down. So it didn't really leave me much option there. We tried to argue with them about it. Ended up being pretty much just nothing we could do about it, which as much as that sucks, you know, it's CCP's game, you know, it's nothing. It's not like we can like pull out some like lawyers or any bullshit like that. So as much as it sucks, and I did disagree with the decision, and I think that there's a lot of inconsistency, you know, I've kind of gotten over it already. You know, it's whatever. Like, shit sucks, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Gotcha. So to quickly review for any listeners who are unfamiliar, Creature was running for CSM 13, and he made it through. He was a valid candidate, and we're in the middle of the voting period right now. So if you haven't voted, I'd highly recommend go and vote for the CSM. It's very important for the health of the game and for your enjoyment of the game. But some logs from 2016 came to light from a private conversation between Creature and another player. As I understand it, these happened in-game. And some of the language that was used in those logs, CCP determined to be not good to have a CSM candidate or a CSM member with that sort of reputation about them. Or at least that's the gist that people seem to be taking away from CSM's decision. And so CCP Guard made a forum post. He said that they would have found these logs when they did a background check, if Creature made it into the CSM. And so instead of letting him run through the rest of the voting process, counting up the votes and things like that, they just went ahead and removed him from the CSM election, test removed him from the ballot, and then all the votes were transferred to the secondary person in the transferable vote system that we use. And we've got Noisy on here to talk a bit about things that have happened recently with the CCP Terms of Service, with the EULA, and also some other sort of corporate moves, if you will, that CCP's made that are related to this topic in particular.
Yeah, the first big thing that happened corporately for CCP is that they joined something called the Fair Play Alliance. This is a whole bunch of game companies that have games with bad reputations for kind of language and stuff, sort of like, you know, with, you know, Blizzard and Riot and some of the other games. They've gotten together and they've basically come out and publicly stated they're going to come and they're going to crack down on this kind of behavior and this kind of language. So,
terrible idea.
So that was the first thing. And so the first thing that we saw from CCP with the Fair Play Alliance was what happened with GigaX. He was a little bit toxic, shall we say, and it was on game. It was in the game and it was on stream, so everybody was seeing it. So they basically didn't have a choice, and that may have been the first major step for anybody in the Fair Play Alliance.
Gotcha. Now, did any changes happen to the terms of service or to the EULA when they joined the Fair Play Alliance, when they started doing these things, or are they just stepping up their enforcement of rules that have always been there?
I went ahead and I looked back 2 years, and there have been changes to the EULA, but it's more to be in line with European Union privacy concerns more than anything else. So it's basically they are being more, I wouldn't even say that they're even stepping up their enforcement. It's just that this came to light, and I don't think it would have came to light under their normal procedures of checking out candidates before they run. I think that for CSM, they check the people's records and they don't go and do a deep dive.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I've never been a big fan of the whole edgy internet culture with the, you know, like it's cool to say racism and all that. I will say that I'm highly skeptical that Creature is the only person who's ever said anything reprehensible worth removing under the Fair Play Alliance that's currently running for CSM. But, I mean, that's no excuse. It really isn't. It's unfortunate. But I think it's a welcome change, but it seems somewhat selectively enforced. But that's not to say it shouldn't be enforced when it is there.
Yeah. And there is some question about whether it has to be in game or not. When you see people like GigaX have, you know, be permanently banned, when you see people like a guy named Ron Fedorf or something like that, there was a Russian who was removed from the from running in CSM8 for being part of a white supremacist organization in the game. Things like that are high profile.
An in-game white supremacist organization?
Believe it or not, yeah. And believe it or not, that's actually in the terms of service that if you are a member of such, you get permanently banned.
This shit's getting out of control, man.
And this was back in 2000 for CSM8, so that was, what, 2014?
Yeah.
But yeah, so you've got all, so you've, this goes back, it's just that they don't really, I don't think they have the bandwidth to monitor everything in game. And then if you start going out
of game. This isn't unique to CCP and EVE. I mean, unfortunately, we're going through a whole cultural moment as far as, do we really want to police people's language? And are we really going to fire everyone who says even the minorest offense and all that? And that's not really our domain to answer, and it's not CCP's domain to answer. I mean, CCP runs EVE. It's a pretty big game. It's within gaming culture. It's got a pretty large presence, so they kind of have to roll with the times a little bit. I don't know what the proper way to handle these situations are. I definitely don't think, you know, any of the edgy gaming culture that likes to think race, you know, casual racism is cool just because you're behind a keyboard and not real life talking to someone who's actually, you know, saying those comments in person to someone. I don't like it, but I mean, it's definitely been a part of gaming culture for the past since not as long as I've been fucking gaming. So,
well, that brings up an interesting point.
It's hard to say how these cultural changes are going to play out, but it's definitely not unique to CCP in any way, shape, or form. It's there's a whole larger movement going on that you could probably have a whole 2-hour show about.
Yeah, being like a cultural shift, it's not something you can force. It happens naturally. It's like an evolution of what we find acceptable or the language you use. All these things are constantly evolving, aren't they? So,
as we're looking at this particular case, you brought up an interesting point about the shift in culture. And these logs were from 2 years ago. Now, the argument could be made, well, the culture was already shifted. But what happens if CCP is looking backwards into game logs, or more likely, players are looking backwards into game logs, bringing stuff forward to CCP? Is there a line to be drawn somewhere where we say, hey, listen, this was just culturally accepted in the past. Maybe this person has changed. Maybe this is not acceptable now. What's the deal there? What about retroactively effective rules?
Something CCP is not equipped to answer. Like, that's not a question CCP has anyone on staff who should be in. Like, that's a big philosophical question. Like, I mean, if you're following anything that's going on with Joy Reid right now, where they're digging up Joy Reid's, she's an MSNBC anchor, they're digging up her blog post from like 2005, or any one of these politicians where they're digging up posts or past comments from 10, 15 years ago, what's the statute of limitations on any of this stuff? I mean, as we move further and further into the future where most of our lives have been on the internet and, you know, in text messages and chat logs, like, is anyone going to be able to do anything in the future when you can just go and dig up someone's past comments from 15 years ago? I mean, I know I've said some pretty shitty stuff at times. I wouldn't want to come out. I'm sure everyone has that point. So, like, we're eventually going to have to answer that question. And that is not something CCP or any of us in this channel, I imagine, is capable of answering. So it's part of being, you know, in the culture and part of a, you know, movement, I guess, or a moment in time. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, we still have to deal with it.
Yeah, with regard to the creature thing. So it was one of my guys that actually posted that thing. And I think, you know, CCP, they don't really owe everybody in EVE, you know, justice or fairness sort of thing. You know, it's their game at the end of the day. They can make decisions, you know, with all these sort of various bans and things. You know, people say, oh, well, there's not consistency. They don't actually owe us consistency, really, you know. And so the way I see the creature thing is they're basically making an example. That the logs were put onto their own forum. You know, if it was just Reddit, maybe they could have, you know, just sort of let it fizzle out and brushed it under, or not even brushed it under.
Of course, I'm making an example. My only problem is when you start digging into people's past, like, you're basically saying that you can never evolve as a person. You can never improve as a human being. You know, any mistake you made 5-10 years ago will run the rest of your life. And I'm just not, you know, like I said, this could turn into a 2-hour discussion on stuff that has nothing to do with EVE. But I mean, 2 years is not that far back, but, you know, well, I'm sure we could go back 3 or 4 and find some pretty terrible stuff about a lot of people. And we really weren't going to say that no one can ever change.
Now, it's an interesting point that you brought up there, Javi, that it was one of your guys who posted this stuff. There's been a lot of speculation that this was done in direct response to Test kicking PL out of Providence. Any comment you want to make to that?
Well, this is how it went down for me. We were just on comms looking at CSM candidates, you know, going through them, looking at various sort of manifestos or whatever. And we read creatures and we were like, oh my God, to us, you know, from our perspective, we're like, this one is, you know, if ever there was a self-serving platform to go in on, you know, this was it. It was the shield capitals, you know, from a test guy who have one of the few shield capital fleets in the game, you know, and that sort of like rung a chord. I mean, like, damn. And then my guy Bronzer, he was like, I recognize that name, you know, where's that? Where do I recognize that from? So he did a little bit of digging and there it was, you know, that log. And we were like, okay, this could have legs. So yeah, we went straight ahead and posted it. So I would say less to do with Provi, more to do with the platform that Creature was going in on. You know, it would you know, if his wishes had come true, it would have been detrimental to us, and it would have been you know, massively, you know, positive for Test. And we thought, you know, if we can throw a spanner in those works, we will. Why not?
Now, it's worth mentioning that recently there was a revamp to the CSM, and they changed the white paper. They moved the CSM from 14 down to 10. And I was looking around trying to find what exactly the changes happened to the white paper, if anything changed that would have affected the behavior standards expected of CSM members or CSM candidates. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find something, but I recommend if you're interested in this topic and you're looking for somewhere else to go to maybe look for some consistency, look for some hardline rules, maybe take a look at the CSM white papers if you can find any information on them from the minutes that were happening when they were changed or things like that. That's another place to look to further read into this topic.
And if you really want to know about the behavior standards or at least the standards to be elected, you basically have to go to either the news article or the dev blogs announcing the candidacies each year, because they change in there like every year. Sometimes it's you can have a EULA violation and we'll let you run. Other years, it's like, if you have one, we will definitely not let you. So it changes year to year.
This wasn't even in a EULA violation. I never received any type of report in-game for this. Never heard anything about it. 2 years ago, this is the first time it came up was back in October. I never received any in-game punishment for that. CCP guard confirmed that there's no in-game punishment for what happened. And the only thing that blocks me is running for CSM this year. They didn't even rule out that I'd be able to run next year.
Yeah, that kind of like plays into what I said. You know, it's more of making an example. They had to do something because of, you know, where it was posted. It was posted on the Evo forum. You know, it was right there. They just have to be seen to be, you know, making these kind of moves, I guess, you know.
The thing I worry about is that basically we found dirt within about an hour and a half of searching on pretty much several previous CSM candidates and a lot of current CSM candidates, saying either the same or worse language. So the problem is it that we need to post it on the CCP forum for them to actually do anything about it? I mean, if they're going to have a publicly run, if they're going to have a public office like this, you know, and say that, oh, well, you can't do anything like that because, you know, blah, 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 it's public or whatever, or are they just going to keep it to where, oh, you can only not say this stuff in game? So if they're going to have something that public, they either need to pick that, oh, well, it's only going to be in game, but if it's not in game, then it's okay.
So, yeah, and counter, I would say they don't need to pick, because, you know, at the end of the day, they don't owe us justice, you know, as players. They just got to make the game, run the game. You know, and like Progod said, the sort of theological questions, they don't have to answer those. And they don't owe us consistency. And they've consistently shown us that they don't owe us consistency with their bands of Gig X or things like that, you know. So
it's ridiculous to expect it. This is one of my biggest problems with gaming culture, is like, and it makes sense, you know, we as gamers, we get very involved with our games, we're very attached to them, we get very intense with the culture and all that, but I mean, there's like, what, even the big games have a small community team. I mean, you're going to sit here and expect them to police every transgression and go after everyone and enforce it uniformly? I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. It's a completely ridiculous expectation.
I just want to bring up something because it's now historical. Since Creature just said that he's would be allowed to run next year, this isn't the first time this has happened to any players.
They didn't say that I could run next year, but they didn't say I couldn't.
All right, so that's basically, there have been two examples that I know of where people have been told that after a public blow up. The first one was the Mitanni after CSM7, and where he was removed, but then was told that he could run again in the future. And then the other person I know of was Zenuria, where he apparently got caught bragging about being part of LulzSec. And so he was removed from the ballot once.
It goes like 2010, by the way, it's Mitanni. But
yeah,
interesting.
It's, I mean, and that just shows you how far we've come, like just in general. Like what Mitanni did then, and he's since, you know, more than apologized for it. And it's once again, like, are you going to hold a past mistake against someone for the rest of their lives? I think we've all moved on from that. But I mean, the fact that they told him he could run again Is Creature going to be able to run again? I mean, he said it 2 years ago. What's the difference between 2 years and 3 years? It's when you start getting into this whole policing people's, you know, actions from 4 or 5 years ago and saying that they can never, you know, atone for a mistake or evolve on a position or become a better human being. You quickly learn that you can't enforce it the way you thought, and you're making compromises left, right, and center. It's just a bad place to be, I think.
I suppose at the end of the day, it's CCP's game. They have consistently described themselves more as the janitors of the New Eden universe. And so it's their responsibility and their sole right to determine what is art and what is graffiti. But that's going to do it for us on this show today. I'd like to thank all of our guests for showing up today. Really appreciate your time, your comments, all the info that you shared with us. I'd also like to thank our engineer, McLeod, our show manager, Sarah, although she was out this week and McLeod is filling in, as well as our producer, January Valentine. We also have a webmaster, Keskora, and you can see her work at talkinginstations.com, where you can also pick up back episodes, staff info, and take a look at how you can support the show. See you next time on Talking in Stations.